Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Pei Zayin Amud Bet. Amar Rabbi Yanai, Ein HaTevel Mitchayev B'Maaser, Ad Sheireh Pnei Abayit. So Rabbi Yanai makes a statement that Tevel, which is something that requires Trumot Masrot to be removed from it, it does not gain that status of Tevel until it's Ro'eh Pnei Abayit, until it sees the face of the house, which in essence means that it is brought into the house. It enters the house through the front door. Shnemar bi'arti ha'kodesh min ha'bayit. So the pasuk in Parshat Ki Tavoh that speaks about vidui ma'aser, there says that bi'arti ha'kodesh min ha'bayit. I removed that which was necessary, meaning the trumot masrot, I removed them min ha'bayit, from the house. What does the house have to do with this? Well, the house is the determining factor to make it into something that is chayav in trumot and masrot. So therefore, when I'm bi'arti ha'kodesh, I take it out of the bayit, because that's the location in which it becomes chayav. Rabbi Yochanan amar, afilu chotzer kovat. Even the courtyard is sufficient to generate this obligation. Shenemar, v'achlu b'sharecha v'saveyu. Because you eat it in your she'arim, you eat it in your gateways, v'saveyu, and you'll be satisfied. So it indicates that the eating of this item takes place in the she'arim, when you've already gone through the sha'ar, the gate, and the gate is the gate to the chatzer, into the courtyard. So their machloket is not such a wide chasm between them. It's simply a question of what generates the chiyuv. Is the chiyuv generated by entering into the courtyard or into the house? In their day, every house had a courtyard that sat in front of it. The courtyard was usually an area or a shared area with other houses in front of it, but also was the kitchen. It was an area where a lot of the avodat habayit was done outside of the houses. It was until a couple of years ago in Yerushalayim, you used to be able to see that in places like Shari Chesed, where they had very small homes that were there, and then they had a courtyard in front of it. Inside those courtyards, they had their ovens, their stoves, and some of their kitchen materials, like many things of the house. The house was simply the dining room and the bedrooms. There was nothing else in the house. Maybe a little sink in the kitchen, but the majority of the things that were done for the house were done in the chatzer. So every house had a chatzer. The question is, does the chiyuv devolve when you enter into the chatzer, or only when you enter into the bayit? The bigger question, which the Gemara will deal with in a second, is what does the house or the chatzer have to do with this at all? We know that the chiyuv for Trumot de Masrot is generated at an earlier stage, which is at Gemar Melacha. Whenever you finish processing the item, the example that's always brought that we see in the Gemara many times is Miruach HaKri. It's when you smooth out the pile that you've made of the grains that you have harvested. So how does that interplay with Rabbi Yanai and Rabbi Yochanan? The question of whether it's an interplay Doraita or an interplay Derabanan, which will play out over the Daf. And that tension remains even the Halacha about what is the impact of Riyatz Pnei Abayit and Riyatz Pnei Chatzer vis-a-vis the demand of Gemar Melacha to be Mechayev you in Trumot and Masrot. So the Gemara asks between Rabbi Yanai and Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan nami aktiv min abayit. For Rabbi Yochanan doesn't also say that you have to be arti hakodesh min abayit. Amar lecha chatzer dumya debayit. The chatzer has the same din as a bayit. Ma bayit hamishtamer. Just like a bayit is a secure location, af chatzer mishtameret. So too, a courtyard is only deemed a courtyard when it is a secure area. So if you want the courtyard to act like the house, it has to have the characteristics of a house. Just like a house is a secure location, so too the chatzer must be a secure location to be a chatzer that suffices to generate the chiyuv of Trumot Masrot over here. Rabbi Yanai nami aktiv. For Rabbi Yanai doesn't also write bisharecha. What does he do with that? Ha'o mi bayile dima'ale derech shar. That you're only chayav if you bring it in through the gateway. Lafuke derech gagot bekarfifot delon. That comes to exclude the case if you bring in the items through your roof, or you bring them in through the back door, then there is no riat pnei abayit. That is more extensively discussed in the Gemara in Beitza with regards to the din of Rabbi Shaya, which is that ma'irimim, that people used to play games or trick to get out of the chiyuv of Trumot and Masrot, which is that they used to bring it into the house, derech gagot bekarpifot. Because then it does not generate the chiyuv, as we see here, which is that when you say riatz pnei abayit, pnei means the front, the doorway into the house, derech hashar, going through the gateway. If you come into the house in a different manner, then that is not classified as Riyat Pnei Abayit. And that's what Rabbi Yanai is telling us. So Meitiv, Rav Chanina Chuza'a. So this has to do with our Gemara, because now they're going to bring a question from a drusha that we made yesterday with regards to the Poel. It says there, Kinafshecha Savecha, that you're allowed to eat when you're working in the field or the vineyard of your friend, Kinafshecha Savecha, at your will, at your pleasure, until you are satiated. So we said there, Kach Nafshosho Poel. Just like the nefesh of the balabayit, so too is the nefesh of the poel. Just like the balabayit eats at will, so too the poel eats at will. Just like the balabayit is not chayav in trumot masrot when he goes into the field and picks the fruits and eats them, so too the poel is not chayav in trumot masrot. Ma nafshecha ochel upatur. Just like you, the balabayit eats, again at will, and it's patur. Af nafshosho poel ochel upatur. So too the poel eats without any consideration about being chayav in trumot masrot. Ha, lokeach chayav. From that, you would infer that a purchaser would be chayav. The question revolves around what was the hava mina that you require a pasuk to say that the poel is patur. Why would you think that the poel is any different than the balabait? If the balabait can eat in the field, why can't the poel eat in the field? The answer is that the poel is receiving the ability to eat as remuneration for the fact that he is working. So that means that it might be salary. If it's salary, it's the equivalent of him purchasing the items. Likicha, or purchase, is one of those items that triggers the necessity for trumot and masrot. So what the Gemara infers from here is that the poel has this exemption. Halokeach. But if you're talking about a stam lokeach, you're talking about a stam purchaser, he would be chayav. What's the problem with that? Where is the poel located right now? Where is the poel working? He is, my love, bisadeh. He's out in the field. So now, if you're out in the field, and you are purchasing, and that is generating or triggering the chiyuv trumot masrot, then what happened to riat pnei abayit? As Rashi notes over here, my love bisadeh, Umekach lo adif mi gemar melacha. Mekach is no better than a gemar melacha. So if you require beyond the gemar melacha, riatz pnei abayit, or riatz pnei achatzer, like Rabbi Yanai and Rabbi Yochanan do, then what is the lekicha nesadeh do that overcomes or obviates you for the need to go to riatz pnei abayit or to riatz pnei achatzer? In a normal case of gemar melacha, we still require that extra stage. Over here, why don't we require that extra stage if lekicha itself suffices to generate gemar melacha? It still doesn't overcome riatz pnei abayit. And so that question is both on Rabbi Yochanan and on Rabbi Yanai, because here you are able to generate a chiyuv trumot masrot without ever having riatz pnei achatzer, riatz pnei abayit. Tosfot says that Rashi explained here that lokeach lo adif mi gemar melacha. That lokeach is no better than a gemar melacha, which implies that whatever is going on in the field is not yet a gemar melacha, which means that they haven't finished the work on it and purchasing it. Tosfot then has a problem, a fundamental problem with that. He says, "Vekasha, dimkei mukilach shein nigmar melachto lemaser." So that means that we're talking about a case where you didn't have gemar melacha lemaser. He says that's a little bit of a problem because from other gemarot, which he quotes over here, mashma the lekulu amorai the hotam a mekach enu koveya. The kicha, purchasing, only works to trigger the necessity for a chiyuv trumot masrot after gemar melacha. Meaning that there are different ways to trigger. And the way that the Balei Tosafot are explaining it is that once you've reached gemar melacha, then you have different ways of triggering the final stage. One way of triggering the final stage is riatz pnei abayit or riatz pnei achatzer. The other way to trigger it is purchasing, lokeach, when you buy it. But both of those are post gemar melacha. So at that point in time, your decision as to what you do with the item will impact. If you sell the item from directly in the goren, then it likicha generates the chiyuv or triggers the chiyuv trumot masrot. On the other hand, if you're going to take it into the house in order to finish the processing or keep it there, then that is what triggers the chiyuv trumot masrot. The way Rashi is explaining it is that the mekach replaces the gemar melacha. So that's why Tosafot is bothered by that. And says that Rashi's explanation is difficult. V'nira d'hochi parich. But therefore Tosafot says this is the question of the Gemara. My love is sadeh, lokeya chayiv, mishum de mekach koveya bedavar shenigmara lemachtol maser. So Tosfot says the question is as such. What we just articulated in the Baya Tosfot, which is that lekicha or mekach triggers the need or the necessity for trumot masrot once there is a gmar malacha, which is what's said here. Bekasha lekulu, and therefore it's a problem for Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yanai, delo miflege, it makes no distinction. Vafilu belokeach bai riyat pnei abayit u pnei achatzer. Our assumption would be then that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yanai never exempted anything from riyat pnei abayit. So the Gemara's question is, if lekicha by itself generates the chiyuv trumot masrot after gemar malacha, what happened to riyat pnei abayit? What happened to riyat pnei achatzer? The assumption being that you need both. That you would need both lekicha, and then you would need riyat pnei abayit after that point to generate the chiyuv. Not that way I articulated it before, that there are two paths once you have gemar malacha, which is one is lekicha and one is riyat pnei abayit, riyat pnei achatzer. That would be the easy answer to the problem. But what Tosfot says is the Gemara's question is, Rabbi Yanai and Rabbi Yochanan never made such a distinction. Since they didn't make that distinction, this becomes a problem for them as to why you don't require Riyat Pnei Abayit or Riyat Pnei Achatzer in this case. So Amar Papa, Hacha b'te'ina ha'omedet b'gina. The situation or circumstances where the te'ina is standing in the garden, that means it's outside the chatzer, outside the bayit, but nofe note lechatzer askinan. But its branches hang over into the chatzer. Ulaman damar labayit, labayit. And according to one who requires a bayit, they're hanging out inside the house. So, Tosafot, we'll discuss in a second, discusses why this is the structure of what we're saying. But right now, they're avoiding the issue of riyat pnei abayit or riyat pnei chatzer by having the item be in the chatzer, or having the item be inside the bayit. Now, the trunk is outside, but the branches are inside. So when you go to pick the fruit, at least those branches that hang into the chatzer and hang into the bayit, you're going to pick them inside the bayit, or you're going to pick them inside the chatzer. And obviously, it's clear from this that when we say that you need riat pnei abayit, or you riat pnei chatzer, the fact that you're already inside already generates riat pnei chatzer, riat pnei abayit. We don't say, well, what happens now when he picks the fruit inside the house? Where's the riyat pnei abayit? He didn't enter through the front door. No, so you don't have to enter through the front door with the fruit itself. That's why most of the Rishonim phrase it here. But rather, the fact that you walked into the house and picked it in the house simulates riyat pnei abayit, because you've done exactly what riyat pnei abayit would have done, which is bring the fruit into the house. And so that's how you avoid the problem, but obviously you have to deal with that issue. So most Rishonim just take it simply to explain that riyat pnei abayit, riyat pnei chatzer, this is the result of that, and therefore it generates the same effect. That's one. Number two is the fact that Rav Papa brings te'ina as an example is somewhat difficult, because te'ina is only chayav in trumot masrot midirabanan. Here we're speaking about trumot masrot midoraita. Midoraita, according to the majority of the Rishonim, only has application by dagan, tirosh, v'yitzhar. Dagan being grains, Tirosh and Yitzhar, grapes and olives, are really grape juice, on wine and olive oil. Those are the things that are chaya midoraita. Te'ina, which is a regular fruit, is not necessarily chaya midoraita. The Baal Tosafot already pointed out of that. Elanaka te'ina lefisha yumitsuyim b'nehem. He says that the reason they used the fig as an example, because that was a common fruit that was amongst them, not because of te'ina in particular has a chiyuv midoraita. This is the Tosafot, the Shitato, who says that the maaser of these trees is midirabanan. Now, everybody agrees that maaser or trumot of yerek, of vegetables, is midirabanan. With regards to fruit trees, there is a difference within the Rishonim. Some Rishonim think that fruit trees might be chayav midoraita. The Ravid has a shita that the shivat aminim might be chayav midoraita, not just dagan, tirosh, and zitzar. There are others that say that the tree itself might be chayav midoraita when you're dealing with fruits. But generally, most Rishonim believe it's only Dagan, Tirosh, Nitzar, and therefore the Te'ina here, you have to say, is Lav Davka. Elim Kain, he is intentionally bringing in the Te'ina here to move the discussion from a discussion of the Oraita to the Rabbanan, which means that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yanai think, or their statements are stated at a Torah level. The Gemara over here is not agreeing with that. The Gemara over here thinks it's all rabbinic in nature, which will be the conclusion of the Gemara at the end. But what the Gemara needs to clarify is, what is the Torah chiyuv to understand what is the rabbinic chiyuv, because the rabbinic chiyuv can only be built on top of a deoraita. So they're clarifying both, and that's why Rav Papa intentionally used the teina over here, because he wanted to show or indicate that we're discussing an issue, the Rabbanan, but we're layering it on top of what is the deoraita. And so therefore he uses the teina intentionally. I think that's the view of the Rashi, makes that point. Right, so now we have the question, which is, so here you have a machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to why this works. Rashi over here says, ikra b'chutz. The trunk is outside, and the branches are on the inside. And that's what makes the difference over here, which is, the Gemara says now, iochi, right, if that's the case, balabayit namine chayev. Why isn't the balabayit also chayav? Why are we also speaking only about the poel? Over here, the way that we're structuring the pasuk is, just like the balabayit is patur, so too the poel is patur. That means that it's taken for granted that the balabayit is patur. Why should the balabayit be patur here? He's picking it in his house, or he's picking it in his chaser. Why should he be any different than poel? So balabayit einav b'teinato. The balabayit, according to Rashi, has his eye on the tree. V'lokeach einav b'mecho. On the other hand, the buyer has his eye on the purchase. So the balabayit looks at the tree as being the ikar, or the crucial element of this tree is determined by the trunk, because he's looking at this in a more holistic sense, which is, I have a tree, and I have a fig tree. So therefore, everything is drawn after his ownership of the fig tree, which is determined by the trunk of the tree. On the other hand, for the poel, who is picking the fruit and wants the fruit, for him, that all that matters is the fruit itself. And therefore, they're going to have different outcomes over here. So that's what Rashi says. Eino nof chashuv beinav. Hilkach hakol aleich achar ikar. For the balabayit, the branches aren't as important as where the trunk sits. Bikara bechutz. Hilkach ad shigamer kol likitato. Then until he finishes the whole picking. Vikanes labayit lav gemar malachu. So until he picks the whole tree and then takes it into the house, then it's not considered to be a gemar malacha or riyat pnei abayit. For the purchaser, it's the other way around, because he just is after the fruits, and therefore the fruits are where they are picked. For Rashi, as Tosfot points out, this is the only scenario where this would happen. This is the only scenario because you have to have the trunk outside and the branches inside, because that's what determines the difference here. It's the trunk is what's important to the balabayit. The fruits are what important to the poel. If you had a reverse scenario where the tree was in the chatzer, the tree was in the house, and the branches outside, then you would, in essence, get the reverse din, which is that the balabayit would be chayav, because his trunk is inside the chatzer, inside the bayit, and the nofer, the branches that are outside, for the person who's picking, he's going to be picking outside, and therefore his focus is on the outside. That's what you would infer from Rashi. The Balei HaTosafot disagree over here, and say that it's irrespective of where the tree is located, that it has nothing to do with the trunk being inside or outside. It's simply that the trunk and the branches are in different locations. Why does that matter? So that's what the Balei HaTosafot explain over here. Difference is the mindset of the picker. When it comes to the balabayit, the balabayit's intent in picking is to pick the whole tree. And since his intent is to pick the whole tree, he does not become chayav in Trumot Masorot until he reaches what we call the goren, until he reaches the point where he's picked the whole tree. He stripped the tree down of its fruit. On the other hand, the poel's view over here is that he's after the particular fruit that he picks. He's not interested in picking the whole tree, because the whole tree is not what he's going to get to keep. All he gets to keep are the fruit that he picks and he eats right away. So the poel looks at things in a much more narrow scope because of his intent to eat whatever he picks off the tree immediately. The balabayit looks at it in a much broader scope, which is, I have a tree full of figs that I need to get down. And therefore, for him, it's a larger piece of work that he has to complete, or a larger misima that he's after. And that's what Tosafot says over here. Over Shmaitin, Shesachar Poel Lul Kolt, Kol Aroi Lulakeit Shayach Lameimar Inav B'Teinato. Anything that he could pick becomes something that could be chayav right away. V'lo Chashiv Gorin B'Gmar Malacha Ad Shil Kolt Kula O Ruba. But for the balabayit, it's not considered to be a goren until he takes off the rove or all of it, because that's his intent. And therefore, the Tosafot makes no distinction as to where the trunk or where the branches are, as long as it has to do with the balabayit always will be patur until he picks the whole tree, or at least the rove of the tree. The Poel will always be chayav as long as he picks it inside, because as soon as he picks it inside, it's whether the trunk's inside or outside, that's what he's going to eat. He's done. Or for him, in his mindset, he's finished. Each thing is a discrete object that he could eat. And each one by itself is considered to be the end of the godin for him. But that's the way that Tosafot deals with it. And therefore, Tosafot does not distinguish between the trunk inside or the trunk outside. It's nothing to do where the trunk is. He says, then why did the Gemara mention that the trunk was on the outside and the branches inside? Just said, practical. People don't grow a teina tree in their house. They don't grow a teina tree even in the chatzer. That the chatzer and the bayit are places of utility. The place where you put a tree is in the gina. And so therefore, he says it's a practical consideration as to where the tree is. It's not a halakhic consideration. Rashi sees it as it being a halakhic consideration. Where the trunk is determines. Where the branches are determined. Whereas for Tosafot, it has nothing to do with the placement of the tree, everything to do with the particular individual's interaction with the tree. The Poel has a very discrete interaction. The Balabayit has a much larger scope of interaction with the tree. All right, so now the Gemara says, V'lokeach midoraita. So here we go back to the fundamentals over here. That's what I mentioned to you before, that those Rishonim that think Rapapa intentionally mentioned the Teina is because of this part of the Gemara. V'lokeach midoraita mimichayev. Since when mina Torah is the purchase of an item a trigger for a Torah requirement? V'atanya, mipnei macharvu chaniyot shel Beit Hino. Why were the shuk, why was the marketplace of Beit Hino destroyed? Shlalosh shanim kodem Yerushalayim, 3 years before Yerushalayim was destroyed. You have to remember that the Romans lay siege to Yerushalayim for a number of years. And in coming to lay siege to the Yerushalayim, they desolated or destroyed everything that was around Yerushalayim. Beit Hino is a village that is outside of Yerushalayim and was destroyed at the time that they came to lay siege to Yerushalayim. So it's destroyed before Yerushalayim is ever destroyed. But the Gemara asks, why was Beit Hino destroyed earlier than Yerushalayim? Mipnei she'emidu divrehem al divrei Torah. Because they followed the ways of the Torah. Implied in that was that they did not follow the ways of the Rabbanan. Shayu omrim, because they used to say, aser ta'aser ve'achalta. That two psukim that are next to each other. Aser ta'aser and then ve'achalta ve'lo mocher. Tevuat zaracha, tevuat zarecha ve'lo lokeach. So they used to say, and that's true, that mina Torah, it says, aser ta'aser ve'achalta. That if you're going to eat it, then you are required to take off trumot masot. V'lo mocher, the seller is not. If you're going to sell the grains, you're going to sell the produce, you are not obligated to take off trumot masrot. Tvua zarecha, it must be your tvua ve'lo lokeach, and not the purchaser. Ella, what does that mean? The trigger here for trumot masrot when it comes to transactions is midrabanan. It's only a rabbinic ordinance. V'kra asmachta bi'alma. And the pasuk is only in asmachta, meaning that the pasuk that we brought to indicate that you were chayav by mekach, those psukim are just an asmachta, a din that is learnt out or leans on the psukim deoraita. So now we have downgraded the issue of lekicha or purchasing to a din derabbanan, and now it's no longer a problem for Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yanai, because Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yanai are speaking about triggers midoraita. And here, lekicha, or a transaction, only is a trigger midorabanan. Ein hochanami, midoraita, there may not be any chiyuv trumot masrot in that instance, because you haven't reached the riyat pnei abayit, the riyat pnei achatzer. Lekicha can't trigger that type of chiyuv. And so then it's no longer a question on Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yanai. We can reconcile them because we're dealing with different issues. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yanai are dealing with the chiyuv doraita. And the trigger that we just spoke about, which is the purchase, that purchase would only be something that triggers me derabanan as a gemar melacha. They were punished because they did not give reverence to the dinei derabanan. They went back to the din doraita and they ignored the din derabanan. So therefore, their ignoring of the din derabanan is what made them culpable for destruction prior to Yerushalayim. That's the Gemara's explanation for why that happened. I told Sefot over here on the previous Samud, speaking about Tevuat Zaracha v'lo lokeach, discusses when does a lokeach trigger the need to take off Trumot Masrot. So the Marabeinu Tam and the Ri Mordechai, the Ri Bar Mordechai here argue about when it is that there is a trigger. Rabbeinu Tam says, Rabbeinu Tam, Doch Ayri Vilokeach Achar Miruach. It's only when you purchase it after there's been a Gmar Malacha. Aval Lokeach Kodem Miruach, if it's taken before Miruach, Ki Hotam Tuat Zarecha Karinan Bey. Then it does have a din of Tuat Zarecha, and there is no exemption Midoraita. So what the Rabbeinu Tam says is that after Gmar Malacha, if you purchase it, then Midoraita, there is no obligation because you as the buyer is not classified as Tvuat Zarecha. Since it isn't your Tvuah, and now you purchased it, there's no obligation Midoraita to take off Trumot and Masrot. But if you were to buy it before the Gemar Malacha, then when you did the Gemar Malacha, that would generate it or turn it into Tvuat Zarecha. The need to be Tvuat Zarecha doesn't mean you grow it. Doesn't mean that's been your field. It simply means you have to be the processor or the finishing of the processing of the item. So if you are the processor, then it does become Tvuat Zarecha, and then it would be subject to a Chiyuv Doraita. That is the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. On the other hand, the Ri Bar Mordechai Hiksha Perish Rabbeinu Tam. He says that Alokeach Tvuah Mimurechet Mi'am Aretz Havidamai. Someone who buys a Tvuah from an Ama Aretz is considered to be Demai. A Mishum Safeku. And that's only a Safek. Aval Im Vadai Lo Yiser Chayav La'aser Min HaTorah. If you knew for certain that when you purchase the item, you go to the shuk and you purchase the item, and you know they didn't take off Trumot Masrot, from that, those Mishnayot that tell us that when you purchase them in Am Haaretz, it's Demai, Safek, Trumot Masrot, it would imply if you knew for sure he hadn't taken off, you would have an obligation, Midoraita, to separate out Trumot Masrot. Afal Pi Shenit Mareach Kvar. Even though it's already past the point of Gemar Malacha. According to Rabbeinu Tam, once you pass the point of Gemar Malacha by another party, and then you buy it, you'll never be chayav in Trumot Masrot Min HaTorah. So then how do you explain all these Mishnayot that seem to indicate if you buy it, you're chayav if you know they haven't taken off Trumot Masrot? He says, V'lav Pir Chayi, and then he tries to discuss why it is not a question. Aval, the Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Mordechai Nira Lefaresh Ipcha. He wants to explain just the opposite of the Rabbeinu Tam. V'lokeach She'enu Mimurach Patur. If you buy something before the Gemar Malacha, you are patur. She'adayin lo nitchayev b'shut ha-mocher. Because it was never chayav in the Rishut HaMocher. It never reached the point of chiyuv Trumot HaMasrot. And therefore, when you buy it, it will never become chayav in Trumot HaMasrot Midoraita. Aval lokeach mimurach. If you buy something after the Gemar Malach is already done, ho'il v'nitchayev b'shut mocher. Since the mocher would be chayav, tu lo poka shem tevel minei. Your purchasing of it will not change that status. So they come to opposite conclusions about what the meaning of this Gemara is. The Gemara says, Tvuat Zarecha. It must be your Tvuah in order to be Chayav in Trumot and Masrot Min HaTorah. What is considered or what makes it your Tvuah that you are Chayav in Trumot and Masrot? The Rabbeinu Tam takes this very literally. He says, I'll tell you what it is. The threshold is Gemar Malacha, which is Miruach HaKri. Whoever does the Gemar Malacha is the one who could possibly be Chayav in Trumot and Masrot Midoraita. Any other party would not be chayav. That means if you purchase it from someone who did the Miruach HaKri, you would not be chayav in Trumot Masrot, because you didn't do it. It's not your tevuah. It was his tevuah. Now, he didn't reach the point of chiyuv, because he didn't go to Riyat B'nei Abayit. So therefore, neither party is chayav, because he's not eating it, and you are, it's not your tevuah. So neither of you are chayav. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam views it. But if you bought it before Tevuat Zarecha, and then you process it, your processing it makes it into your tefuah, and then if you eat it, you're going to be chayav midoraita. That's Rabbeinu Tam. The Ri Bar Mordechai says just the opposite. He says, once the chiyuv devolves upon the grains after miruach hakri for the seller, then the buyer can't get rid of that. That's a status that is embedded in the items, and therefore it carries through to the buyer. You buy it after gemar malacha, then when you take it into your house, you're chayav in Trumot Masrot midoraita. You buy it before Miruach HaKri, then the mocher never reached a point of chiyuv, and then when you do the Miruach HaKri, it's not your tevuah. It was his tevuah that you're doing Miruach HaKri for, and therefore you will not be chayav midoraita. That's right. According to the Ri Mordechai, before Miruach HaKri, if you sell it then, neither party will be chayav. If you sell it afterwards, then the buyer will be chayav at Riyat Pnei Abayit. For the Rabbeinu Tam, it's just the opposite. If you buy it before Miruach HaKri, then you'll be chayav doraita when you do the Miruach HaKri in the hands of the buyer. If you buy it after Miruach HaKri, then neither party will be chayav in Trumot Masrot. So they have opinions that come out just the opposite here about how to explain what does it mean to Tvuat Zarecha. Rabbeinu Tam is very focused on the Miruach HaKri being the threshold that determines. So therefore, whoever has Miruach HaKri, that's the determining factor. So the one who has Miruach HaKri has to have Riyat Penei Abayah. If that's possible, you'll be Chayav Midoraita. According to the Rebar Mordechai, Miruach HaKri makes it a Chayav Midoraita, and that'll carry through to either party. If you sell it before, that's how you can avoid the problem of Tevat Zarecha, and then you would not be Chayav for either party. The Gemara now has downgraded this issue of the Kicha down to a Din Dirabonan. But then you have a problem, Elanafshecha L'mayato. Once you have done that, then why do you need a Pasuk by the Poel to exclude a Din Dirabonan? We just said before that Nafshecha teaches you, just like the Baal HaBayit is Patur in Shmuot Masrot, so too the Poel is Patur in Shmuot Masrot. Why? Because we said the Poel might be like a buyer. If he's like a buyer, that would trigger the Chiyuv Shmuot Masrot. But wait a minute, if buying is only a trigger midrabanan, then why would you need a pasuk min haTorah to teach you, don't trigger this din derabanan? So, nafshecha mayata, the Ketanya. Kenafshecha, this is what it means. Ma nafshecha im chasamta patur. Just like if you yourself entered into the field and muzzled yourself, you'd be patur. Ap poel im chasamta patur. So too, if you muzzle the worker, then you are patur. Meaning that you are not in violation of the din of lo tachsom shor b'disho. There is a requirement not to muzzle an animal when it is working in your threshing area. So as Rashi notes over here, the Gemara later on will have a kal v'chomer. And that kal v'chomer will indicate or seem to indicate that a adam should have the same din as a shor. And that means that you should not be able to muzzle a worker who is working. Along comes this pasuk to teach you, if you muzzle the worker, then you are patur. Now, that depends on what the agreement is between them, what exactly that means that you are patur. Rashi over here says you're patur from lo tachsom, but does that mean you're also patur from any monetary compensation to the individual? So that turns out to be a machloket. Rambam seems to indicate that there's a mitzvah asay for the poel to eat, and then there is no violation of the lav of lo tachsom. But that means that if you do muzzle him, you may not be in violation of a lav, but you may have a monetary obligation to compensate him for the fact that you didn't allow him to eat during that period of time. For others, the meaning of the word patur over here means patur legamre, which means not only are you not in violation of lo tachsom shor b'disho, you also have no obligation or monetary obligation to the poel. So now the Gemara says, Meitiv marzucha, which jumps us over here, Ezu gornan lemasrot b'kishuin u'b'diluim. This is what I was asking, you were asking yesterday, which is, when is the Gemara Malocha for items? So I told you that in the Mishnayot in Masrot, it goes through each item and it has a different period of time, meaning that there are agricultural thresholds for each item as to what is considered to be the Gemara Malocha. Over here, we're bringing an example of that, which is Ezu Gornan, the Masrot. When is the Goren reached? When is that final stage reached for Kishuim and Duluim, for whether it's zucchinis or cucumbers and gourds, those items, those vegetables, what is that final stage? Mishii paksu, when they shed their blossom. If you ever picked any of these items, especially picked the cucumbers or the zucchinis, they have a blossom that is attached to the end of the vegetable. Once you've severed it, eventually what happens is that that blossom dries out and then falls off. So that's what we're talking about here. When it sheds the blossom after you've picked it, that's considered to be the goren, whether that is happening passively, meaning it dries out and falls off, or that can be happening actively, meaning that the person's cutting the blossoms or pushing the blossoms off, but that would be the stage at which it would make it that it has a goren, and that is the gemar, considered to be, quote-unquote, the gemar melacha for these items. Just as an aside, the Rambam in the Perusha Mishnayot describes it not as the blossom, but if you, also again, if you pick these items, when they are slightly less mature, they have these thin hairs that are on them. You go to a cucumber, when it's in a slightly less mature state, it has these fuzzies that are on it. As it grows bigger and bigger, those fuzzies fall off. So that's what the Rambam says, is that that fuzzy stuff that's on the vegetable, that is considered to be the pikus, and that's what you are taking off, or that's what's falling off to make it into a gemar melacha. Rabbi Yassi says, Mishi natel pikes shelahem. It's not when they shed the blossom themselves, but rather when you actually take off or remove the blossom. My love. So what does it mean, Mishi Paksu? So what does it mean that they fell off or they shed their blossoms? Afilu Bisadeh. Sounds like even out in the field, if they shed it, that's the Gemar Malacha. So now, That would mean it can't be before you pick it, because as Rashi notes and Tosva notes, there's no such thing as chiyuv tshuva to masrot b'mechubar. But that means at the point of picking, if it sheds its blossom in the field, then that would be considered the gemar malacha, and you'd be before riyat b'nei abayit. That's the problem here. Is before riyat b'nei achatzir, riyat b'nei abayit. This is a question of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yana again. Mer says lo mishi paksu b'abayit. No, it's only once they shed it in the house. Mer says iochi mishi paksu. It's the language that you use here is improper. It shouldn't be when it sheds the blossom, because that's not true. The language should be achi paksu mibayile, until they shed it. Now, the difference in language isn't as clear here, but the Balei Tosafot and many of the Rishonim discuss that in other places in Shas, we have a similar idea, which is that when you say ad shipaksu, that means that it's not simply that the shedding of the blossom or the taking off the blossom is what determines. It means that you need something else, and the ad shipaksu. And once they have been shed in a certain location, that's when you become chayav. If you simply say mishi paksu, that when they shed, that makes it sound like shedding is the sole determinant of the chiyuv over here. So the language of mishi paksu means that there's only one trigger, shedding the blossom. Achi paksu gives you an additional option, which is that until it sheds, what do you mean until it sheds? Until it sheds in the house. That until already indicates that there's another trigger that's involved here. So that's what the Gemara says. If you think it's in the bayit, it should be achi paksumi bayile. It says, itan achi paksu avamina ad gamar de pikusayu. I would have thought if you said achi paksu, it means until they finish shedding. Kamash malan mishi paksu mechi atchuli pikusayu. That you don't need the entire goren to drop its, or shed its blossoms in order to be chayav. Once the vegetables begin to drop their blossoms, that is the trigger. So they didn't want to use achi paksu, because achi paksu indicates two things. One is that there's another trigger, but also indicates achi paksu means until you finished having them shed. And that's not what we want. We want it to be that when they start shedding, that is the goren. So he used the lashon of pikus, even though the real trigger is riyat pnei abayit. You need both, riyat pnei abayit and the pikus. But he used the language of pikusayu because he wanted to indicate to you that it's just the start of the shedding, mishi paksu, that once they start shedding, that is the trigger, not when you have completed the shedding. And so now another question. Meitiv mar zucha breder of Nachman, gorno lemaser lechayev alav mishum tevel. What is the gorin for maser to make it into tevel? Mishitigmar blachtan, when they are finished being processed. Ve'ezu gmar blachtan. What is their gemar melacha? Milechat hachnasatan. The gathering of them. My love. What is the meaning of hachnasatam here? Hachnasatam afilu bisadeh. Sounds like bringing them in or gathering them either in the field. Lo hachnasana bayit. That is the real explanation. Zeu gemar melachtan. That is the completion of the process. Now, Rashi notes this already. What the Gemara did here is that there's two meanings to the word hachnasa. The word kinus, or lachnis, has two meanings. Lachnis, like the traditional sense that we think of hachnis or hachnasa, means to enter, or to go in. But there is also a hachnasa or kinus, which means to gather together. So what the Gemara thought at first was hachnasatan meant to gather them together, to bring them into a goren, to make them into a pile. Where does that happen? That happens out in the field. So that was the Havamina. The Havamina was that the word Hachnasa over here means to gather them together, and that's what triggers the Chiyuv. The conclusion of the Maskana is, no, Hachnasa means to enter them, to bring them into the house. It's not the gathering of them together, but rather the bringing them, the Hachnasa, the moving of them into the house, that is what triggers the Chiyuv Masrot, or the Gemar Melacha. And so their Havamina Maskana is not simply, oh, Sadeh, then no, buy it. It's a different explanation of the word hachnasa. At first we thought hachnasa meant to gather, now we think that hachnasa means to enter. And therefore the conclusion would be, no, this is not against Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Yanai, because the Gemara Malacha is bringing them into the house. V'ibayitema, this has a very important nafkamina, because many accept this distinction in the halacha, which is kika ma Rabbi Yanai b'zeitim v'anavim. That when did Rabbi Yanai make his statement? That is by olives and grapes. Delav bnei goren ninhu. Because they are not subject to a goren. Aval chitim v'seorin. When you're talking about wheat and barley, goren behed yoktiv be. The Goren is specifically mentioned by them, which is Dagan. Right? That is that subject to Digun. So that means that the difference between them will be, what are you speaking about? If you're talking about Anavim and Zeitim, which is interesting in of itself, because it runs into a problem, as the Balei Tosafot point out, that the Torah obligation for grapes and olives is Tirosh V'Yitzhar, which really means wine and olive oil. Despite that fact, the Balei Tosafot say that subsumed in that is grapes and olives, the difference being what your intent is. When you pick the grapes and olives, if you intend them for juice, then the chiyuv is on the wine and on the olive oil. If you intend them for achila, for eating, then their chiyuv is determined by achila. What is the determining factor of Gemar Malacha there? The Gemar Malacha over there is Riyat Bnei Abayit, because they don't have a goren. A goren is where you gather them together, you silo them, you store them in a certain manner. That is true by grains. That is not true by olives and grapes. By olives and grapes, either you're going to bring them in the house to eat, or you're going to take them to the press to be pressed. If you take them to the press to be pressed, then their Gemar Malacha is going to be extended until you reach the point where you've made the wine is dropped into the boar, or the olive oil is gone into the boar. Those are going to be the triggers. But over here, where you're intending to eat them, what's the trigger then? What's considered to be the Gemar Malacha? So in this version of the Gemara, that Rabbi Yana's din and Rabbi Yochanan's din are for those types of items. Those types of items that don't have a goren, what is the Gemar Malacha? Riyat Pnei Abayit, Riyat Pnei Achatzir. Items that are picked for Achila. Those items, what triggers the Gemar Malacha? The answer in the end is Riyat Pnei Abayit, Riyat Pnei Achatzir. For items like grains, where they do have a goren, then the determining factor for them will be the goren. That'll be the Gemar Malacha, and they will not require a Riyat Pnei Abayit or a Riyat Pnei Achatzir. Problem with that is, it's in the Gemara of Sachim and Beitza, that position of Rabbi Shaya that we discussed, which is that Rabbi Shaya over there says, if you want to be patur, mitrumot masrot, you should bring the grains into your house, bimotz shela. You should bring it into your house when it's in its shell. Because if you bring it into your house within its shell, that means that you have not done the Gemara Malacha, and Riyat Pnei Abayit is not effective in that case. But that implies that once you make it into a goren in your house, you will not be chayav, or that Riyat Pnei Abayit has impact even on grains. So Rashi notes that already. V'adamar ba'alma gabi chaber shemait, v'niach miguram le'aperot, mikara imur, delo tavol k'rabi Oshaya, damar adambarim al tvuato, late leila hai terutza. He cannot hold of this answer of the Gemara. El afilu b'chitim misarim, nami amar Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Oshaya, and that those Gemaras must believe that Rabbi Yanai's din of Riyat Pnei Abayit applies not only to fruits and vegetables, but also applies to grains. So Rashi already notes that this second answer, as appealing as it is, there are clearly other Gemaras that indicate otherwise. And those Gemaras say that bringing in grains in their motes has an impact. Well, grains only have an impact if you think Riyat Pnei Abayit has any impact on grains, and that is that Shita of Rabbi Oshaya, as well as the Gemara in other places. And Rashi simply says, Machloket. They can't be reconciled. Those two cannot be reconciled, and therefore that answer works only if you read Riyat Pnei Abayit has an effect on Dagan. Our Gemara, according to this answer, thinks that Dagan is not subject to Riyat Pnei Abayit at all. Tosfot also discusses over here, based on that, if the important aspect of Riyat Pnei Abayit is that the Gemar Malacha be done beforehand, and then you bring them in, as Rashi knows over here with regards to the grains. If you believe there's a need for Riyat Pnei Abayit, they have to be processed outside and then brought into the house when they're already finished. That presents a problem for what we just said before. Remember when we spoke about the blossom falling off the vegetables, we said there that, oh, is it when it falls out from the field? The Gemara says, no, when it falls off in the house. That means that you brought the vegetables into the house with the blossom on. That means that the processing only happened inside the bayit. Riyat Pnei Abayit doesn't have an impact when it's before Gemar Malacha. So how do you reconcile that? So Tosfot also here makes such a distinction. Since they are normally processed out in the field, that because the normal process involves processing them in the fields, then bring them into the house, if you bring them to the house before they're processed, no chiyuv maser. On the other hand, aval kishuim duim rigilot achnisan debaitim epikus. The normal way is to bring them in with the blossom still on the item into the house and then have it fall off in the house. So therefore, it is classified as Riyat Pnei Abayit, even if you're taking it in before the Gemara Malacha. So Tosfot says that you'll have to bifurcate the din between the normal process by Dagan versus the normal process by vegetables. Since by vegetables, it's normal to bring them in the house before the Gemara Malacha, Riyat Pnei Abayit will be even before the Gemara Malacha. For grains, where the processing is normally done before they enter the house, Riyat Pnei Abayit won't be effective if the Gemara Malacha is done outside the house. So that's how Tosfot deals with what seemingly is a difference between vegetables now, which we're saying can be finished in the house, versus grains that have to be finished out in the field. All right, so now the Gemara goes back to backtrack about this idea of Mechubar and Talush and Nochta Shom Sorbeti Sho. What is its interplay with the Poel? So Gemara says, Ashkan Adam be Mechubar. We know that an Adam be Mechubar has a right. That is our case here, which is a Poel has a right to eat from things that are attached. As he's picking them, he's allowed to eat them. Bishor be Talush. The case of shore is in a case where it's already detached, because it says, lotachshom d'shor b'dishom, when it's dash. That is when it is threshing. And the threshing floor, when it's already separated out. And that's where he has a right to eat. Adam b'talush minalon. How do we know that a man has a right to eat even after it's separated? Remember, our Mishnah says that the man is entitled to eat from the time that he starts picking it at the Gemar Malacha, all the way until the chiyuv masrot devolves upon the item. How do we know b'talush that he has it? Gemara says, kavachomer mishor. That would be a kavachomer. Umashor shenu ochel b'mechubar ochel b'talush. The shor does not have entitlement when it is attached. It has entitlement when it is separated. Adam shochel b'mechubar. Adam who eats b'mechubar inu din shochel b'talush. And certainly she should have a right to eat b'talush. The kavachomer is somewhat problematic, because we'll see here in the conclusion of the Gemara that some of these assumptions don't stand. But by the shore, you have a command not to muzzle him. By an Adam, you have no obligation not to muzzle him. We just saw that in the limud of Kanaf Shecha before, that you have a right to muzzle him. So who says that you can make such a kavachomer? Adam has a kula where you're allowed to muzzle him. The Adam mitzuveh al chasimato. So Gemara says, okay. Who says that an Adam you're allowed to muzzle? You should use the same kal v'chomer to also say he can't be muzzled. Mi kal v'chomer, mi shor. Ma shor shi atam mitzuveh l'chachayoto. By a shor, we have no command to keep him alive. Atam mitzuveh l'chasimato. Despite that fact, you're not allowed to muzzle him. Meaning that you have to allow him to eat, despite the fact that you have no obligation to keep him alive. Adam shi atam mitzuveh l'chachayoto. A person who you do have an obligation to sustain and keep alive, then certainly you should not be allowed to muzzle him. Amar kra kenaf shecha. That's our pasuk, which teaches you kenaf sho sho puel. Man naf sho im chasamato patur. Just like by yourself, meaning about yourself, if you muzzled yourself, you're fine. A puel im chasamato patur. So too, if you muzzle the puel, you're also patur. So that teaches us that a puel does not have a din of chasima. So then you have a problem now, because we just undermined the kal v'chomer. Now Adam has a kula that shore doesn't have, that you're allowed to muzzle him, not the shore. So now you can't learn a kavachomer from shore to Adam. Bel Adam betalush minolan. Then how do we know that Adam betalush is that way? Amar kra, kama, kama bet pe'amim. The pasuk uses the term kama twice. Im enu inyan li Adam be'mechubar, tneu inyan Adam betalush. Kama, by definition, is standing grain, so it is always attached. But the fact that the pasuk used the word kama twice, which was unnecessary, therefore, you would then darshan one of them to mean literally mechubar, and the other one to enu inyan the mechubar, tneu inyan talush, to tell you that Adam has a right to eat as a poel, both when it's attached to the ground and he's harvesting it, as well as when he is working with it b'talush before it reaches the time of chiyuv trumah tumasrot. Rabbi Ami Amar, Adam b'talush lo tzarich kra. Rabbi Ami says, why do you need a pasuk at all? It says, k'tiv ki tavo b'kerem reyacha, when you enter into the vineyard of your friend. How do you know what he's doing when he's going into the vineyard of his friend? Mi lo askina shetzcharo l'katef. Who says that he wasn't hired to carry the grapes from the field to the next station? Who says that he's going there to pick grapes? All it says is he's going into the vineyard to work for you. How do you know what the work is that he's going to be doing? So now, it can't be that he's doing work that is not involving picking or Gemara Malacha, because it says, El Kel Yecha Lo Titein. So it already we have something that guides us that it's got to be towards the end of the process. So it's got to be in the picking or beyond. But still, if it's beyond, over there, that might be why he's going to Kerem Reacha. And the Torah says you have a right to eat in that instance. Shor b'mechubar minalan. How do we know that you're not allowed to muzzle a shor even when it's dealing with mechubar? Kal v'chomer me'adam. Should I have a kal v'chomer me'adam? Ama adam sheinu ochel b'talush. Adam that doesn't have a right to eat b'talush ochel b'mechubar, he's allowed to eat when it's attached. Shor she'ochel b'talush. The shor that's allowed to eat in the detached enu odin she'ochel b'mechubar, certainly she'd be allowed to eat b'mechubar. The problem with the kal v'chomer, and again we'll see the same thing with the previous kal v'chomer, is it's not true that Adam is Ein Ochel B'Talush. We just proved that Adam does eat B'Talush. So what you have to say is that Ein Adam Ochel B'Talush, B'Hedja. That's not explicit in the Pasuk. It's true in the end, we have a limud that teaches us that he eats B'Talush. But what's explicit in the Pasuk is that Adam is only allowed to eat B'Mechubar. So that would be the nature of the Kal V'Chomer. It is definitely difficult, the Kal V'Chomer. Okay, now, Gemara says, Mala Adam, Sheken Atam Mitzuveh L'Chachayoto. Well, maybe Adam is different because there you have a command to sustain him. That's why he's allowed to eat mimuchubar. Tamar b'shor she Adam mitzuveh l'chachayoto. By a shor, you don't have that command, and therefore maybe the kal v'chomer doesn't work. Man has a chumra that shor doesn't have, and then you break up the kal v'chomer. Mar says, okay, v'yeshor mitzuveh l'chachayoto mi kal v'chomer. So then let's use the kal v'chomer to also prove that you have to keep the shor alive. Ma Adam she Adam mitzuveh l'chasimoto, Adam mitzuveh l'chachayoto. An Adam where you don't have a command not to muzzle him, that's what we learn out of Kanaf Shecha, that we learn out that you're allowed to muzzle an Adam, yet you're still responsible for his well-being. Sure, she'atam mitzuveh chasimato, a shore where you're not allowed to muzzle him, certainly, no din she'atam mitzuveh l'achayoto, certainly you should be enjoined to have to sustain him and keep him alive. Now, by the way, this is an incredible havamina, because there's no question that you're allowed to shecht the shore. So what would be the command, l'achayoto? By an Adam, there is a command to keep him alive, which means to sustain his ability to live. By a shor, we know that you're allowed to shecht the shor for meat. The Torah gives a specific permission. It's a mitzvah of shechita. So then, what does it mean, mitzuveh l'chayoto? So what you would have to say is that, yes, if you're going to shecht the animal and eat it for meat, that you're allowed to do. But until that point in time, while you're utilizing it, you have a mitzvah l'chayoto, or this possibly could be another source for Tzar Balei Chaim, which is that that you can't starve it, you can't injure it, you can't do things to it in between that don't sustain it. You have an obligation to sustain it as long as you want it alive. You want to shecht it, then you have to shecht it properly. But otherwise, you have an obligation. The Gemara is going to reject this, but the Havamin is amazing that you would have the same din of the Chayoto. So Amakra, V'chei Imach, we already did this earlier in the Masechta, that you have a requirement that your friend lives together with you. Together with you means that imach, that you also get precedent. We learned that earlier in the Masechta. Achicha velo shor. The obligation to sustain someone only applies to another human being, not to animals. Now the Gemara is back to square one. We don't have a kal v'chomer anymore. El shor b'mechubar milalan. How do you know you're not allowed to muzzle a shor when he's dealing with things that are attached to the ground? Amar kra reacha, reacha bet pe'amim. Uses the term reacha multiple times. You don't need it by an Adam anymore because you already know that an Adam is allowed to eat mechubar because you already had Reacha once. So again, here, Reacha is imenu inyan le'adam, tneu le'inyan l'shor. That's one of the midot ha-Torah nidreshet by him. When you have a term that is repeated and it's teaching you the same din, we say imenu inyan for the din that we know because we know it already. That's tneu le'inyan acher. Put it into something else that will be a chiddush or add on. So here, that will add on the fact that a shor b'mechubar is also, there's an obligation not to muzzle him. Ravina Amar, lo adam b'talush, v'lo shor b'mechubar tzrichei kray. Says, adam b'talush, which is not explicit, and shor b'mechubar is also not explicit, neither of them need psukim. Dichtev, because it says, lo tachsom shor b'disho. It says, do not muzzle a shor while it is threshing. Michtei. Kol mile itnu b'chassima. He says, we know that every animal is subject to this din of muzzling. The muzzling here is not particular to the shor. It's any animal that is working. You cannot muzzle the animal in that situation. Delfinan shor, shor mishabat. If you remember in Baba Kama, we learned out that when it comes to the use of shor and chamor, it does not mean shor and chamor in particular, but rather it means shor as representing all animals, or chamor representing all animals. And we learned it out from the psukim by Shabbat, where it uses shor and chamor, but also uses kol be'ema. And so therefore, Shor Chamor then become interchangeable with Kol Behema. That's what the Gemara says here, that there's a Giloi Milta, that the word Shor means Kol Behema. If that's true, why did the Pasuk write Lo Tachsom Shor Bidisho? We could simply write Lo Tachsom Bidisho, and you would have known it applies to all animals. Why specify the Shor in particular? Imkein Lechtov Rachmana Lo Tidosh Bechasima. Don't thresh with someone muzzled. Shor Dichtiv Rachmana Lomeli. Why do I need the word Shor if it's not particular to Shor? Lakushe Choseim Lenechsam. To bring a hekesh between the muzzler and the muzzled. Venechsam Lechoseim. And so too, from the muzzled to the muzzler. Ma Choseim Ochel Bimichubar. Just like the muzzler eats Bimichubar. Ach Nechsam Ochel Bimichubar. So too, the muzzled will eat Bimichubar. Ma Nechsam Ochel Bitalush. And just like the muzzled eats Bitalush, meaning the shor. So too, Af HaChoseim Ochel Bitalush. So too, the one who muzzles, the muzzler, also eats bitalush. So that extra word of shor comes to teach you that there's a parallel between the chuseim and the shor. The chuseim and the nechsam. And that parallel will bring the din of one to the other, and therefore you will not need any other psukim in order to make that limud. It comes out of the pasuk itself. Okay, we're going to stop here, 6 lines down on the top of peitet amud aleph.